It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, you heard him. We are living the dream and taking you with us. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3, The Game. I'm Aaron Wells. Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth both out today, but I've got my good friend, the producer of The Huddle and the program director of this whole station, Brady Farkas, sitting across from me. How you doing, Brady?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm an idiot. I didn't turn your mic on.
Well, you hijacked the opening.
I thought you wanted me to do the opening.
You do whatever you want to do. I just was like, okay, there you go. I thought, are you leading the whole show tonight, baby?
I guess.
It is Sports Saturday right here, 101.3 The Game and 1013thegame.com. Jeff and Austin out today. Brady and Aaron sitting in here. The holiday itself is over. We're trending towards New Year's, though, as well. Did you have a good Christmas, Aaron?
I did. I had a lot of fun. I actually got to go up and see my uncle yesterday, too, so my holiday sort of extended through the week.
Now, do you have any big family traditions or anything?
Not really. We have one. My mom buys everyone new holiday pajamas like every year thematically.
Does your entire family wear the same pajamas or like?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, but this year we got ours like a few days early and I made the mistake of wearing mine one day and I lost them in my laundry. So I was the only one in my family not wearing everything.
So your family matches the pajamas?
Yeah, for no reason. It's honestly, it's a little bit of an odd tradition, but I don't know.
I used to get pajamas, but they were never the same.
Our t-shirts were different. The pants were the same this year. I think that's usually how it goes.
Okay, there you go. So my holiday was great as well. A lot of great gifts, a lot of great time with the family, great time with Jess as well. Yesterday, we went over to a friend of the show. I'll keep his name out of it, but he's got an unbelievable collection of memorabilia of all sorts. Okay, it doesn't matter. It could be cartoons, could be sports, whatever. We went over to his house, excuse me, and we saw the collection firsthand. You have never seen anything like this, Aaron. You'd think you would have died and gone to heaven. Sports. It was unbelievable. I could have spent 3 hours in this place.
Yeah.
Are you a big collector of things?
Not really.
You're very organized. Like you're not a clutter person.
I would not say I'm organized. No. I'd say I'm a little bit neurotic, but as far as actually being able to keep things in order the way I would like them, I'm not exactly good at that.
Well, I'm a collector of things. I like to have a lot of stuff. I'm not a hoarder. I'm able to throw things away, but I like acquiring things that I think are cool. Like my office downstairs, yeah. I have so much swag, collectibles, whatever. I have 5 times more than that in my parents' house. I mean, it's I'm going to need a giant house with a giant basement just for all of my stuff.
Yeah, you have like a man cave with all of your collectibles, your 10 Ken Griffey Jr.'s.
It's going to blow a man cave away. I need the entire basement. I have a friend who her family is also, her dad is big into collectibles and her brother is good friends with my brother. So I've been to their house as well and they have so much stuff in their basement. Like you can't even go in the basement because you just can't risk breaking things. Yeah. That's kind of how my basement's going to be. It won't be allowed to be used. I'll maybe be able to get a TV and a couch down there. But other than that, everyone's going to have to stay away because I'll be afraid of things getting run into, things getting broken. I'm going to have like the coolest basement that no one's allowed to actually go to.
I have a friend who his family was collecting sports memorabilia for a long time, and then they got the idea to run a little sports memorabilia shop out of their basement. So, not their basement, their ground floor, which is like their garage area.
Yeah.
So they have a bunch of cool stuff there. I had like a, I think it was like a Bryce Harper batting practice bat there.
Oh, cool.
But one of the things I saw that I thought would be interesting is because it's not just sports stuff. It's mostly sports stuff. But one of the things they had was they had a Peanuts, like a really old Peanuts, like a lunch pail.
Oh, see, those are worth a lot of money. Have you ever seen any of those shows like on History Channel, like Pawn Stars or American Pickers?
Yeah.
Okay. Those lunchboxes and thermoses, those things go for crazy amounts of money.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know, I mean, I don't know how many of the listeners know this. I'm a huge Charlie Brown person. Like, I love Charlie Brown. I love Snoopy. I love the Peanuts. So I got so much stuff related to that. And everything Jess and I buy seems to be Peanuts related.
Well, I was going to get that for you. That was going to be your Christmas present. But then the guy whose connection I have to get it is not here. He's at college in Carolina.
Okay.
So he can't really help me. I don't know his dad. So I wasn't able to get it in time. But
you brought mac and cheese. That's all that mattered.
Well, I didn't even do any of the work for that. That was all my mom.
Oh, that's okay. Your mom brought in mac and cheese for the station. And so that was more than fun. That was a more than suitable gift. And I didn't need a gift, but it's more than suitable gift. New Year's Eve is coming up this week. This will be your final New Year's not being 21.
Yeah.
Well, right?
Yes, it will. I don't think I have any plans, though. I know I'm going to...
That's because you're not 21. You shouldn't have any plans.
Well, I had plans last year.
Well, maybe you went to Canada and those plans were okay then.
Yeah, sure.
All right.
But I'm going to the UVM game on Christmas, on New Year's Eve, so I'm excited about that.
UVM playing George Washington. That'll be a 2 o'clock start. We'll have it on 101.3 The Game. UVM hockey back in action today on WVMT, 6:30 with the pregame show there. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. Town Fair Tire text line is open. Phone line open as well. Huge show planned for you. We've got two phenomenal guests joining us. Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press down in Miami is going to join us in about 15 minutes, get us ready for Patriots and Dolphins. And then also, we're going to hear from Ian O'Connor of ESPN, who wrote a phenomenal story on Eli Manning and his final days as a New York Giant, which are coming up tomorrow. Eli's most likely last game as a member of the Giants organization as the Giants take on the Eagles. You know, Aaron, I'm not into lists. I really don't enjoy Mount Rushmores. I don't enjoy who's the GOAT talk. I'm just not into ranking things that are great. Things we know are great, I'm not into ranking. The NFL Top 100 show, they've been doing it for the last couple of weeks where they rank the top 100 players in the league, and they've had it segmented by position. And Bill Belichick's been a part of the crew there that's helped make the decisions and do the breakdown. I found myself into it last night, and I found myself into it watching the final episode, which was the reveal of the quarterback position. Tom Brady was there. He was obviously part of the top 100 team. For as much as I hate lists, I found yesterday fascinating to see Brady and Belichick there together, Aaron, talking about the history of football, about players that they played against or coached against. I thought it was really riveting because Belichick, we know, doesn't say anything to the media. Brady finds a way to talk a lot without actually saying anything. And they found a way. And yesterday, they opened up in a way that I've never heard either one of them open up before. I thought it was ripped. Did you watch any of it?
Yeah. So I know the segments you're talking about. I know specifically Tom was interviewed about Peyton Manning a good deal. And he actually had a lot of really interesting X's and O's stuff. I'm an X's and O's nerd. Anything schematic in football, I get excited about. So his segment on working out with Peyton Manning was super exciting.
Well, Manning was one of those guys as well that was named to the top 100 team. Again, rather obvious. But it was really interesting to hear Belichick talked about how coaching against Peyton Manning was like coaching against the offensive coordinator, the play caller, and the quarterback all in one. And if you tried to beat the Colts or Denver when he played for them, you weren't trying to beat the head coach. You were trying to just beat Peyton. You were trying to just get into Peyton's head. Said that part of the reason why they went for him, or that famed 4th-and-2 inside their own 30-yard line a bunch of years ago, part of the reason why they did that is because they just did not want to give Peyton Manning the ball back because they didn't think they would get it back. And like that coaching against Peyton Manning changed the way that you coached because he was so good. There was also some fascinating stuff there about Brady when Belichick spoke about kind of Brady's rise to power in New England. We've got some stuff here. Bill Belichick talking about Tom Brady. What do you have for us specifically?
So I have here Bill Belichick talking about when he knew that Tom Brady was going to be something special.
When did you know that he was something a little bit different?
Well, Tom was special his rookie year, even though he didn't play. His leadership with the other rookies in the class, we had a big rookie class. Tom took them every day after practice and would run them up and down the field and their offensive plays, and was clearly a leader on the field, and then, you know, had a very good training camp in 2001.
So from the start, even before he was getting first team reps, he was leading the other young guys on the team.
And that's a tough position to be in for a rookie at times, because you don't know, especially when you're a rookie that's not playing, you don't want to overstep your boundaries. And I remember last year hearing Baker Mayfield talk in interviews, and he would say, look, Tyrod Taylor's the starting quarterback of this team. Yes, I've been called a leader before, and yes, I think leadership is a trait that I have, but all I can really do is lead by example. Tyrod Taylor is a guy who is going to be the vocal leader of the team. He's the starting quarterback here. That's his job. I'm not going to overstep his boundaries. So I'm sure Brady faced a lot of the same there with Drew Bledsoe his early years in New England, but he still found a way to find a group of people that he could lead, and that was that rookie class. And he said they had a big rookie class that year, Belichick did. It was also fascinating. Do you have the part where Belichick said that basically he almost benched Brady early in the season?
No.
So Belichick told the story that Bledsoe came back from the injury, you know, the hit from Mo Lewis. Belichick said that Bledsoe came back from the injury. He was eligible to start practicing. So he split the reps in practice, 50-50 down the middle, Brady and Bledsoe. And it seemed like he was trying to get Bledsoe kind of back into the starting role. So Brady goes out. They play Sunday Night Football against the Rams, the teams they eventually played and beat in the Super Bowl, and they lose. And they didn't play very well, and Brady didn't play very well. So Belichick was pretty honest with himself after that game, and he said this last night, that I looked at it like, how could any quarterback play well only getting 50% of the reps? So the next week, he actually made the decision to give Brady 100% of the reps. Brady went out and played great against the Saints, tore them apart, sliced them up, and then that cemented kind of Brady's position as the starting quarterback for the Patriots that year.
And then they won 9 straight.
Yeah, they won 9 straight after that one as well. That was the kind of the catapulting into the playoffs for them. Patriots are getting ready for the Dolphins this week. Again, we have it for you at 10 a.m. tomorrow with the coverage right here on 101.3 The Game. We're going to talk to Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press down in Miami in 10 minutes or so. We have to ask him about the comments made by the old Dolphins players. Okay.
Yeah.
So Manny Fernandez, Larry Little have come out and said that Bill Belichick is no Don Shula. And the reason why is because Belichick likely will eventually pass Don Shula's all-time wins record. 347 wins Shula has. Belichick right now at 304. So you think about it, if he keeps up the same pace, and I don't know that he will, but if the Patriots keep up the same pace, Belichick probably gets it in another 4 seasons or so. Well, the old Dolphins don't like Belichick being in the same conversation as Don Shula, because Manny Fernandez says that he doesn't have the same moral integrity that Shula has. So that brings us to our Green City Garage poll question of the day. Aaron, what is it?
Yeah, so our Green City Garage poll question brought to you by Green City Garage in South Burlington. Who is the better coach, Don Shula or Bill Belichick?
But see, that's a tough question to answer in terms of, because Manny Fernandez and Larry Little weren't saying, in my opinion, from where I'm sitting, they weren't saying Bill Belichick's not a great coach. They don't want him associated with Shula. They don't want him breaking Shula's record because they don't like the way that he's done it. And Belichick has opened himself up to that kind of criticism, right? So Fernandez is right when he says, well, Belichick's been accused of cheating. He's been found guilty of cheating. He's been accused of cheating again here in the potential Spygate 2.0. Was he complicit in Deflategate, all that? Manny Fernandez is right to call into question Belichick's integrity. But don't just have revisionist history. Don Shula, for as good a coach as he is, tampering, the Dolphins were found guilty of tampering when he came over from the Baltimore Colts to Miami. They lost their first round pick in just getting him to Miami. He's also on a lawsuit from old NFL players against the NFL for forcing players to take painkillers and for threatening players who didn't take painkillers that they would get cut. Now, different time, yes, maybe more acceptable, possibly, but nonetheless, there's some things in Don Shula's closet also that don't paint the picture that Manny Fernandez and company are trying to paint.
Well, yeah, the reality is that former players of his and people who were a part of that success under Don Shula are always going to side with him. It's the same as Scottie Pippen always saying Michael Jordan's better than everyone in every way, and there's no way anyone's ever going to surpass him. The reality is Don Shula is one of the greatest head coaches of all time, but it's really hard to argue against Bill Belichick because of how dynamic he's been and how much he has changed the way we think about football as a sport.
Well, look, Don Shula was great, okay? He's coached for a long time. He had 33 seasons as a head coach. He had a winning percentage of .665, won a couple of Super Bowls, went to even more, did it with two teams with the Colts. He was there from '63 to '69, and then from '70 to '95 with the Dolphins. You're right when you say that when you're associated with something, you're always going to hold fast to it. You're always going to think that it was better. I mean, I'm sure you've seen this before. When you play high school football, you went to college then. The first time you came back and watched your high school team, I'm sure you were sitting there thinking, man, we were way better than this. Okay, our team could beat this team. That's how everybody thinks. You always think that because you were associated with it, it is therefore better. That you could have done it differently. Or, man, they don't look very good. Did we look that bad? Hell no, we didn't look that bad. Everybody who was a part of Don Shula's team is going to hold fast to Don Shula. I'm glad that his players loved him. I'm glad that they enjoyed him. You know who didn't enjoy him? The players who were suing the NFL as part of the lawsuit that he alleged that allegedly made them take painkillers to keep their roster spot.
Yeah. I got lucky because I didn't have to be in denial when telling myself that our team was better, because the two teams after us had really, really bad seasons. So I could just point to us making it to the playoffs. But no, I agree. And like I said, there's guys throughout history who have been that way. Guys from the Jim Brown era saying Jim Brown is the greatest running back of all time. Guys who played with Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan's the greatest of all time. And I don't necessarily disagree with all those people, but you're a fan by association.
The thing about, so Wade in St. Albans says, I'd like to see a little bit more of Shula's resume before I can answer that question. Well, like he was the NFL champion with the Baltimore Colts, so pre-Super Bowl. So we had the NFL and AFL. He won an NFL championship in 68. He won two Super Bowls with the Dolphins in 72 and 73. He was the head coach of the only unbeaten team in NFL history for a full season, the 14-0 Dolphins, and they went on and won the Super Bowl as well. The other thing I think Shula deserves some credit for is that he coached a number of his years before there were 16 games. So he has 347 wins, but he spent the first, from 1963 to 1977, you played 14 games a regular season. So almost half of his coaching career was spent with different rules. This is not that Don Shula is not a great coach. He was a great coach. He's an all-timer.
Yeah.
Okay, if there was the Mount Rushmore season, which I hate, but he'd probably be on it. Okay, Lombardi, Belichick, Shula, they're all in the conversation. Tom Landry, George Halas, it's close. But it doesn't surprise me that his old players are coming to his defense. It doesn't surprise me that they're questioning Belichick. Belichick has earned the right, or has earned the reputation that he has, so he's earned the ability to be questioned by the outside world. But that said, don't act like Don Shula was a perfect angel when he's asking players to take painkillers and telling them, hey, you'll be cut if you don't do this. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go down to Miami. We'll get Tim Reynolds' take on this. Tim Reynolds, the Associated Press down in Miami. He joins us next. Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game.
Bringing you another day closer to game day. It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
All right, welcome back at Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com. Jeff and Austin out. Brady and Aaron sitting in. We're getting ready for Patriots-Dolphins coming up tomorrow. Pats can clinch the number 2 seed in the AFC playoff picture with a win or a Kansas City loss. So let's go down to Miami to get the lowdown on all things Dolphins with Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press. Tim, how are you?
What's up, Brady? How you doing, man?
Good. I appreciate you joining us. You've joined the station before. You've covered everything from Olympics to World Series to Super Bowls. But before you did all that, you worked with my dad in Albany, New York. I have to remember. I have to ask, do you remember working with my father?
I worked for your dad. Of course I remember working for your dad. How could I forget that? I was in Albany. I met my wife there, and then she was at the Times Union with me. She moved to Miami under the impression that I was never going to get engaged. And 20 years later, here we still are. So I showed her.
You showed her for sure. Before you were covering Olympics and covering Super Bowls, you were covering the Albany Attack lacrosse championship game. And you and I were in the locker room together. I had to have been 10 years old or something like that. But that's my most vivid memory.
You're thinking of the Arena Bowl.
Okay, I thought we were definitely at an Albany Attack lacrosse game, definitely.
Were we really?
Yes, because I have the signed ball.
I remember covering an Arena Bowl when I was at the TU, and your dad was sports editor then.
Yeah,
well, that would have been a about the right time for you. Oh my! It's sad how stuff went. It's sad how stuff runs together. I loved it there. I still keep track of the cats. I love the catamounts. I think that they are going to be on my second weekend of the bracket. I'm telling you right now. It's still home. It's still home. So anytime I get a chance to talk to you guys, I love it.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. You know, interestingly enough, before we get to the actual game itself, the old Dolphins are coming out of the woodwork to disparage Bill Belichick and say he doesn't have the moral integrity of Don Shula. Did any of the comments surprise you by Manny Fernandez, Larry Little, et cetera?
No. I mean, here's the thing. The golf course nearest to my house is Shula's golf course. The steakhouse nearest to my house is Shula's steakhouse. There's a Shula Highway here. There's a Don Shula Expressway down here. What Larry and those guys are doing, they're just being fiercely loyal to their guy. It's ultimate respect. And if the tables were turned, you know, the old Patriots would say the same thing about Bill. Don is 89, almost 90. He's been in failing health for some time. They're just not going to, any notion that he's being disrespected in any way or something like that, any chance they have to defend him, of course they're going to take advantage of it. I mean, why should anyone be surprised that the Dolphins, that the old Dolphins and the Dolphins fan base, whatever, feels a certain way about Coach Belichick? You know, Pats fans probably feel the same way about the Dolphins and a lot of other coaches. I don't think one takes away from the other at all.
You know, I'm not surprised about it either. I completely agree with you. And I think Belichick has earned the right to be questioned by the outside world. But is Shula really the angelic saint that his old players are making him out to be? I mean, there's the lawsuit against the NFL saying that he, basically forced players to take painkillers. There was tampering charges from him getting from Baltimore to Miami. Was he as perfect as they want us to believe, Tim?
You know, I don't think anyone is. And that's the problem in sports. We build these guys up to be saints, to be gods, really. And, you know, when Lance Armstrong comes out and says, yeah, I did it, you know, we're heartbroken. You know, when none of these guys are perfect. I mean, look at what the NFL is dealing with now with the health of guys, not just in their 70s, but guys in their 50s and 60s. It's a brutal game, and people will do anything they can to win. And if back in the day, if in the 60s and 70s, it meant you're going to take this, or you're going to do this, or you're going to practice 300 days a year, or we're going to go 3 a days in 120-degree Miami heat. You know, that was what there's a certain amount of, you know, everyone is probably somewhat guilty for, you know, bending the rules or breaking the rules that much in those times, in the same way that the Patriots always seem to find their way into certain messes, you know, now with, you know, I am so unimpressed with this Spygate 2.0 thing. It seems like much ado about very little, but because it's the Patriots, because it's Bill, of course it became something big. This is why none of these guys, except maybe Mariano Rivera, deserves to be on the pedestal that we put them on, because inevitably you fall off.
As for the game itself, Patriots come in with a lot to play for, and they're 12-3, and they're going for the number 2 seed in the AFC. But Miami is very interesting, Tim, because they started out awful. We thought they were going to be the worst team in NFL history. Now they've won 4 of their last 8, and they're playing a whole lot better. I mean, what's your take on this game going into tomorrow?
Well, I love Brian Flores. I think Brian Flores deserves Coach of the Year votes for a team that's going to go 5-11 or 4-12. And as crazy as that sounds, I don't think there's a coach this year who has done more with what he has. They've had like 85 players on this team. They just keep cutting guys and signing them, and guys get hurt. And I think he's done, I've never heard of, are on this team. I think he's done a remarkable job. And you've seen that they just throw caution to the wind. Like, they don't care. Like, the stuff they were running, you know, the fake field goal against Philly, they play incredibly hard, and for as much criticism as they've taken here from fans and from some of the local media on, you know, you should have tanked, you should have done this, you should have gotten the number one pick to create. I think the Dolphins have done it right. I think Flo's created a culture, or started to create a culture. They're going to play hard. They're going to work hard. I don't think they're going to go up there to Foxborough tomorrow and mail it in. I think they're going to make the Patriots earn that number 2 seed. I don't expect it to be much of a game. I think New England is a lot better than a lot of people realize there. I mean, they're 12-3 and people are throwing dirt on them, which is kind of crazy. I don't think it'll be much of a game, but I don't think the Dolphins are going to go up there and roll over for them either.
You know, I always wonder about how teams with, quote, nothing to play for actually play in Week 17. Are we going to see the Dolphins throw caution to the wind, do you think? Are they going to go for it 4th-and-5 at their own 45 in the first quarter? Are they that kind of team that will just say, you know what, the record doesn't really matter. Let's go out and just let's go out and be gutsy in this game.
I think gutsy, yes. I don't think reckless. No, I don't think Flo will disrespect the game that way. I don't think he's going to do things. I think he's going to try to win this game in the mud. I think he's going to try to slog it out. And then if there's anything left in their playbook, they're going to throw it out. They're going to throw it at Bill, tomorrow. There's no question about that. But the 4th-and-5 from your 45 in the first quarter, I'm not terribly sure it's going to get to that extreme. But I do think you'll see some trickeration. I know Ryan Fitzpatrick, look, he has an opportunity to come back next year and make a lot of money. The thing is, he's not really committed to the Dolphins. The Dolphins aren't really committed to him yet. It could be his last game, and I'm sure he's going to be thinking that. Plus, you never know what's going to happen in the offseason either. So whether he knows it or not, whether he's decided or not, tomorrow could be his last game. You think he's going to go out with a 38-7L? So there is a lot to play for. And I do think, like I said, I'd be shocked if they won, but I don't think they're going to go up there and embarrass themselves.
Tim Reynolds, Associated Press in Miami, with us here, Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com. It's well documented, Tim, that the Belichick disciples have not made great head coaches, okay? McDaniels failed his first time. Charlie Weiss, Romeo Crennel. Bill O'Brien, to a degree, is always criticized. But do you see a lot of New England tendencies in what Brian Flores is doing, or is he kind of doing his own thing anti-Belichick?
I think it's a little of both. I think Flo is definitely far more animated than Bill. I mean, Bill, you can't tell if they've won the Super Bowl or it's game one of the preseason. I mean, Bill's kind of flatline. We all know that on the sideline. Flo has had some explosions on referees this year, and it's just he has a different style. But then, during the week, when you ask him something, he does tend to get kind of Belichickian in a lot of ways. Like, he doesn't give you a whole lot. So, obviously, the Patriot way works. Now, he doesn't have to take every element of the Patriot way, and he will do the unthinkable this offseason. They will try to sign some Patriots free agents. You know that's coming because they're good players, and they know how to win, and they're from a culture that demands winning. So, of course, he's going to try to poach some of those guys. I do think he's done, like I said, I think he's done the best coaching job in the NFL this year. I think that has to be a hat tip in some ways to Belichick. I think Bill O'Brien, he shows what happens when you gave him time. I don't think Josh McDaniels, I don't think he was ready at that time, much in the same way like young guys sometimes aren't, like Lane Kiffin wasn't and what have you. I'm a little bit surprised that the Lions kept Matt for next season. But you look at them and, the quarterback's hurt and they're just bad. So part of it is guys come off the Belichick coaching tree to take the job, but they realize right away if you don't have a Tom Brady and 52 other guys like him, it's really tough to win games on Sundays.
Look at the future of the AFC East. The AFC East is interesting, okay? Two playoff teams this year in the Bills and Patriots. The Jets, for all the circus atmosphere that's in New York, they could finish the season with 7 wins. And the Dolphins have 13 draft picks next year, including 3 first-rounders. Do you think that the AFC East, is trending upwards at this point?
Well, it's definitely trending toward being the best top-to-bottom division because the Patriots are coming down a little bit at 12-3. But, Tom Brady is 100 years old.
Yeah.
So there is going to be some regression there at some point. And like we said about Fitz, you never know about Brady either. I mean, we all think he's coming back, but you don't know. So there's a lot of things that are going to change really quickly in the AFCs. But you're right. The Jets, I don't think the Jets are terrible. I like Adam Gase. I'm in the minority, but I like Adam Gase. I love what Buffalo has done this year. Flo's not going to win Coach of the Year, by the way, but Buffalo probably is going to win Coach of the Year, and I've got no argument with that. And the Dolphins, like you said, they've got all the draft picks. And they've got like $150 million in cap money or something crazy. So like they can go, literally, they can go get whoever they want this year. It's if the Dolphins have the right plan, they could be good again in a couple of years. They could be good quickly. The Bills are good. If the Jets get out of their own way, they could be good. And for as long as Bill is there, of course the Pats are going to be good. I think top to bottom, the AFC East has set itself up to be the premier division in the NFL.
Tim, I got to ask you this before we let you go. 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I was watching the HBO documentary, Belichick and Saban, The Art of Coaching, and we know Saban spent 2 years as the coach in Miami. What was it like being around Saban?
So I was there the infamous day that he said, I guess I have to say it, I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. He said it.
Yeah. He lied. He did. Yeah, he did.
But you know what? I think Saban's 2 years here should be remembered for two things. One, it pours here like every day in the summer and the fall, right? And the Dolphins did not have an indoor facility. So Saban got them a bubble. Hmm. That's his legacy at the Dolphins headquarters. The other part of it is they could have had Drew Brees and they let him go. Like, Saban didn't want Drew Brees. How different would the Dolphins have been? How different might have Saban been? How different would Alabama have been? It's weird to think about how one decision changed the course of so many teams over the years. Saban, it's because he left here, they don't love him. And he didn't win here either. But for those 2 years that he was here, I thought he was great to deal with. I really did. Again, he's like anyone else, Brady. If you ask him a good question, he's going to give you a good answer. If you ask him a question he doesn't like, he's going to go save it on you. It's not much different than any other elite coach. The fact that the Dolphins had him for 2 years, people scoff at it. I think they should celebrate it. Like, they had one of the greatest to ever do it. And sure, I mean, they've had two of the best ever, to coach this team. I don't know why he's not celebrated more, other than the fact that he didn't win. But I kind of like dealing with him because he was, from a media standpoint, he was a challenge. But I kind of like that.
Tim Reynolds, Associated Press in Miami, one of the best doing it. He's covered everything. We'll continue to Olympics, Super Bowls, World Series. He's been everywhere, telling us a little bit about the Dolphins Patriots coming up tomorrow. Tim, we appreciate the time. Have a great New Year. My dad says hello.
Hey, tell your dad, give me a call sometime, Brady. Happy New Year to you, and go Cats. I mean that sincerely. Well, go Cats.
Go Cats, go, baby. Thank you. There's Tim Reynolds, Associated Press in Miami. A lot of interesting stuff there. And Aaron, you probably were too young to remember this, but yeah, when Saban stood up there on the podium and said, I guess I got to say this, I'm not going to be the coach at Alabama, and then left shortly after that, I mean, that is why he's vilified in Miami. Because not necessarily just because he didn't win, but because he left after lying there in everyone's face.
Yeah, I have heard that the story before. Obviously, I was not old enough to know, but I did not know they passed up on Drew Brees, and that is really interesting.
It's crazy, and this is one of Colin's favorite things to do. So Colin Cowherd is on this station every day, noon to 3. It's one of his favorite things to look at, is kind of play the what-if game. Yeah, it's true. So you may not even know this because you were so young. So Drew Brees played for the Chargers.
Yep.
He came up for the Chargers.
Yep.
He injured his shoulder very, very badly and was out for a full season. They go and draft Philip Rivers because they don't think Brees is ever going to be the same. So Brees becomes a free agent. He was going to Miami. He was going to sign in Miami. The medical team would not clear his shoulder. So that is why they passed on him. So mm-hmm. Saban was on that staff. And Tim's right when he asked the question. It's fair. Think about all the dominoes that then fall. Okay, the Saints, if they don't get Brees, are they ever as good as they've gotten? Are they ever, they won a Super Bowl. Do they ever do that? Does the city come back from Katrina the way that it did without Drew Brees there leading the charge? Does Miami become the preeminent franchise in the AFC East? Or what's at least the dynamic like between Brady and Brees being in the same division for 15 years? And, I'd have to think that one of them is not going to have won as much as they did. Maybe they're both going back and forth. Maybe one of them, maybe Brees, dwarfs Brady, and Brady never hits the milestones that he hit, or vice versa. What does it mean for Belichick's coaching career? What does it mean for Saban's coaching career? And he's right, what does it mean for Alabama? Because if Saban gets Brees and is winning at a huge clip in Miami, he may never end up at Alabama, and Alabama doesn't end up as good as they did too. So, fascinating stuff. Tim Reynolds, Associated Press. You can find that interview online, 1013thegame.com, after the show. When we come back, Eli Manning playing his last game as a New York Giant. What do we think of that? That's next. Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game.
Now, back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back. Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com. Brady and Aaron in for Jeff and Austin. Well, Aaron's always here. I guess I'm in for both Jeff and Austin. We've got Ian O'Connor of ESPN joining us at 11:20 today. He wrote a phenomenal story on Eli Manning and his legacy in New York. And Eli Manning gets a lot of grief, and I understand it, right? 117-117 is a starter. He's been largely mediocre for the last 6 years or so, and the Giants have won playoff appearance in, you know, the last handful of years too, and they got blasted in that game by Green Bay a couple of years ago. He won two Super Bowls. His legacy, to talk about the champion, is forever solidified. His overall reputation, I know people want to talk about the mopey dopey Eli faces, and people want to talk about the mediocre record. The story that Ian O'Connor wrote was less about his record, his on-field performance, as just Eli Manning, the guy. And when you're questioning Eli's Hall of Fame candidacy, when you're talking at the sports bar about, you know, whether it should have been Eli or Jones this year as the quarterback, and when you're talking about what Eli's ultimate legacy is on the field, don't ignore the off-field stuff. This is a guy who's been in the public light for his entire life, and none of us know what that is like. It's not just the 15 years in New York, the biggest media market where the pariahs are out every single day. It's not just that. It's living up to being Peyton's brother. It's living up to being Archie's son. It was playing at Ole Miss and carrying the Manning name. It's remarkable the kind of person that Eli Manning has been for a long time. Now, he did have Aaron, verify this, but Eli got in trouble at Ole Miss as far as, I don't know if it was a DUI. I don't want to say that it was that serious, but there was some kind of drunken thing with Eli Manning at Ole Miss. But once he got to the NFL, he's been nothing but a stand-up citizen. And to have that kind of attitude, to have that kind of consistency, to have that kind of approach, and that ability to handle every part of your life and living in that big a market and that big a shadow and that just much, those many eyes on you, it's remarkable what Eli was able to do over the course of his career.
He was arrested as a freshman for public drunkenness.
Okay, public drunkenness. Okay, I knew it wasn't a DUI, but public drunkenness.
It was relatively minor compared to some of the scandals you have in football.
Yeah, still drunk and underage. Still not something that you should be doing. But yes, yeah, it wasn't a DUI, and that would have certainly been more serious. He's not the only person in the history of college campuses to be arrested for public drunkenness. But Eli's been a stand-up guy for 15 years, and I just don't want the rhetoric about Eli to only be about his play. When you think about athletes in New York history, and you can get in Town Fair Tire text line 802-655-6672. When you think about New York athletes that have played for just one team for their entire career, that have no blotches on their resume, it's a short list. Okay, it's Derek Jeter, it's Mariano Rivera, it's Eli Manning. Heck, even Patrick Ewing played for a different team at the end of his career. There aren't many players who can say I spent my entire career in New York and who can say that I never had anything come into question my credibility or my character. Eli Manning has that.
Yeah. And it takes a certain amount of confidence and a certain amount of guts to go 1-6 in your first season with 6 touchdowns and 9 interceptions and ever show your face again in that city, because they will eat you alive. And he did, and he had a great season the next year. And he's had, to be fair to Eli, as far as the numbers thing goes, his mediocrity was more 1 year's rough, the next year's good. So he had good seasons.
Yes, and he's had very good seasons.
And he's always been a stand-up guy, which is really hard to do as a pro athlete, because everything you do is on display.
Everything you do is on display, and everything when your name is Manning is on display. I mean,
right,
you're held to this standard of, okay, your father was a really good NFL quarterback. Your brother is one of maybe the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And he was on that top 100 list yesterday that the NFL came out with, one of 10 quarterbacks for it. So you have a high standard to live up to when your last name is Manning. Town for Tire text line is open, 802-655-6672. and Jim in Essex brings up a good point. Manning might not be done. We talk about him staying his whole career with one team. That's how I'd like to remember Eli. I'd like to think that he'll retire as a Giant. That said, if he wants to play, he could have the opportunity to play. There are going to be teams that need a quarterback next year, whether it's teams that think they're one veteran Eli away from being a contender, or whether it's teams that need one stopgap before they go play Joe Burrow or Tua or whoever. There are going to be teams that need a quarterback. It might not be as many as we initially thought, but you know, when you think about it, I could sit here and say off the top of my head that there's probably 5 to 7 teams that are going to be in the market for a new starting quarterback next year. Miami, we're talking about the Dolphins. They could very well be one. Cincinnati could be one. Now, we think they're going to draft a quarterback at number one overall, but are they going to want to play him game one of the season behind what's been potentially a 1-15 or 2-14 team? So they could be in the market for a veteran stopgap. Maybe Eli fits there. There will be a few.
What teams will have to consider is that Eli has already made it public he doesn't want to do that again. He doesn't want to ever be a backup again. That's what he said. So if a team is looking to have him be a stopgap in between when they draft a quarterback and when they're ready to play him, they're not going to keep him very long, so they should be prepared for something else because he may retire on the spot when you bench him.
Well, could Eli go and take over the job for Mitch Trubisky? We've talked about Tom Brady maybe being a fit in Chicago. Carolina is going to need a quarterback, I think. Are they ready to give it to Will Greer after how he looked last week in his first start, and Kyle Allen had lost 7 in a row or whatever, 8 in a row? I would say no. Now, remember, Cam Newton's also likely going to be a free agent next year. Carolina can move on from him at very little penalty to them. So you could have Eli, you could have Cam Newton, you could have Phillip Rivers, you could have Tom Brady all being free agents next season. And Drew Brees is also technically a free agent next year. So you have a lot of veteran quarterbacks that are technically free agents. Teddy Bridgewater is a free agent as well. So you certainly think he's going to get a look somewhere. So there aren't that many teams that need quarterbacks. And I don't know how many fits there are for Eli at this point, because I would take Bridgewater over him. I'd probably take Phillip Rivers over him, even though I think Rivers is done. I think Rivers is done, at least with the Chargers. At least he should be.
Well, one of the things about Eli's numbers that hurt him in that department is that teams who are a quarterback away are like the Bears are going to be looking for a quarterback who protects the ball because they want their offense to stay on the field. They want to be able to move it down the field. They don't want their progress interrupted by a turnover. And Eli has had turnover troubles in his career. A guy like Teddy Bridgewater, who this year proved he can protect the ball really well, is going to be a much more valued commodity amongst those teams.
Well, and remember the fact too, Andrew Luck could come out of retirement. Do I think that that's likely? No, but could it happen? Yes, that's a possibility. Ryan Fitzpatrick's a free agent. He could be around. I mean, so there are a lot of veteran quarterbacks milling around there, some of which I think have more appeal than Eli Manning. College football playoff is today, and I'm not a huge college football guy, but I will watch today. So it's Ohio State, Clemson, it's LSU, Oklahoma. The reason I will be watching is because I enjoy seeing high-level college football and thinking about how it translates to the NFL. Okay, Joe Burrow might be the number one pick in the draft. Bengals are on the clock already. They'll be watching this game today with a lot of interest because they get a chance to see what Joe Burrow looks like. You're going to see Chase Young, the defensive end for Ohio State. That's the guy the Giants could have drafted most likely if they had the number two pick in the draft because they beat Washington last week. They don't have the number two pick anymore. Could he fall to them potentially? You can get a look at him if you're a Giants fan. You know, Trevor Lawrence, potential quarterback of the future who can't come out this year but can come out next year. He's the quarterback for Clemson. So lots of things to watch. What's Jalen Hurts going to look like for Oklahoma? Because you've seen now Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray come out each of the last 2 years. So from Oklahoma, how about the head coach at Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley, who's always on NFL radar? So lots of things to watch today. So if you're not a college football fan and you just watch college football to see how it relates to the NFL, today is a day for you. Christian Champlain, Eli was done a few years ago. He was carried by the defense when they won. Look at how high his passes were in the Super Bowl. He was very lucky that Plaxico Burress was able to jump up high enough to catch key passes to win. Look, Eli's a great guy. He's been a great New Yorker. He's been a great Giant. If you don't think he's a good quarterback anymore, then fine. He's a free agent at the end of the year, and the Giants won't bring him back, and I don't think they're going to bring him back anyways, and it makes no sense for them to bring him back because Daniel Jones is their guy. But you can think he's done while also relenting to the fact that he's had a great career in New York, at least individually.
No matter how much he actually was able to contribute in those Super Bowls, which I agree, I think the defense was really the star, he'll still be the face of New York athlete.
When we come back,
that cements legacy as a New York athlete.
When we come back, wacky wacky stories. I don't know what Aaron's got for us. Out in left field. That's next. Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com, out in left field. Aaron, you got something weird for us. So this is like your version of Arnie's last story standing.
Yes, it's a very, very similar concept. We just decided to slap it in the middle of the show.
Okay.
So Wisconsin City may decide to toss a 57-year-old ban on throwing snowballs.
I thought there was a Wisconsin City that just put a ban on snowball throwing. So you're telling me another place has had it for 57 years?
Yeah. Wausau, Wisconsin, had
okay.
a ban on throwing projectiles placed in 1962, which just so happened to lump snowballs into the same category as rocks and other items that can actually cause serious harm.
Such a stupid rule.
Yes, and because it's stupid, it has received recent negative national attention, even though it has been used very few times. So they're considering getting rid of it entirely. In fact, the Wausau Police Department made a video showing officers having a snowball fight. And at the end, the police chief, I believe, yeah, the deputy chief hits the mayor of the town in the back of the head with a snowball. The ordinance has only been used a couple times, and only when snowballs are thrown at cars passing, which could be dangerous. You know,
I'll say this. I think it's a stupid rule, obviously, but
right.
Snowballs can be dangerous, like, especially if they're packed with ice. I mean, they can be... Getting hit with a snowball in the head doesn't always feel good.
Yeah.
However, the act of throwing snowballs as a whole, trying to ban that is ridiculous. I still throw snowballs. I throw snowballs at our dog jokingly. I throw snowballs at Jess jokingly. I'll throw snowballs at lights at light posts in our complex and just use it as target practice and try to get ready for next adult baseball season. Like,
yep.
Throwing snowballs is fine. If you don't want to throw them, I understand 30-year-olds not wanting to be hit, 50-year-olds not wanting to be hit by 9-year-olds with them, but by and large, throwing snowballs, more fun than illegal, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you got to avoid the old Calvin and Hobbes trick of the sneaking the rocks into the snowball.
Yeah, that's
stuff.
A tough one.
But so the ordinance as a whole has only been used 10 times in the last 15 years, and only twice for snowballs. And both times it was because they were being thrown at passing cars. It's more commonly used for things like shooting crossbows in a neighborhood or dropping sandbags off the top of a downtown parking ramp, which obviously I could see why those deserve a citation.
Dropping sandbags off a parking. See, I was never rambunctious like that. I was never like a bad kid like that. I didn't do anything fun like that.
No, I don't see the appeal. I mean, I get the appeal of like destroying stuff in a safe place as a kid or whatever, but being out in public and doing stuff that could potentially hurt someone, that's going to be an ordeal if you accidentally hurt somebody.
What do you think about, did you hear the segment the other day about how I'm going axe throwing?
I did. I don't want to ruin it for you, but I know I've seen videos of people throwing it and it just so happens it's off balance or something and the handle hits first and it bounces back. That's why I'll never go.
I'm going. I'm going to do it. Now you're trying to get me scared about it, but if I need someone to go with, will you go with me?
Yes, but I'm going to stand clear of any potential bounce back.
I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun. Has anybody ever gone axe throwing? My brother got me an axe throwing gift card to the new Burlington Axe facility, so it's called Burley Axe down, like nearest to North Ave downtown. I'm very excited for it, but I don't know if anybody has actually done this before. Our old buddy Jake in Williston, so Jake Kent, the fantasy football expert, yep. 101.3 The Game, who used to come on this show regularly, he's gone before, says he loves it.
Yeah, it looks like fun. I'm just, I'm scared of axes bouncing back. No, if I hadn't seen those videos, I'd probably be right in on doing it.
Well, I don't want to see the videos you're talking about. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get ready for hour two. Patriots, Dolphins, what are we looking for in tomorrow's game, week 17, regular season finale? That's next. Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com. Aaron's here as usual, but neither Jeff nor Austin are here. Brady Farkas filling in here on Sports Saturday. We're 20 minutes away from Ian O'Connor, senior writer over at ESPN, who wrote a phenomenal story on Eli Manning and his approach with the Giants over the last 15 years and approaching what is likely his last regular season game in New York. Could be his last game ever in the NFL if Eli chooses to retire a free agent at the end of the year. Hope everybody had a great holiday, a great Christmas holiday, a great Hanukkah if you're celebrating that as well. Some of you are probably out listening to us already returning your gifts. Are you a big rejecter of gifts, Aaron?
No. Even if I really didn't like what someone got me, I would never return a gift. I would feel bad about it.
Would you re-gift a gift?
No. I think that's worse.
You think re-gifting a gift is worse?
I think it's easier to be traced back to you.
Yes, that's probably that's definitely true.
And then I'd feel really bad if the person knew. Yeah. No, that would stink.
I have a hard time rejecting a gift also.
Yeah.
The only time I really could ever do it for the most part is if I already have it.
Yeah. I'm also not picky at all about gifts. So I rarely get gifts that I would consider bad.
What was your best gift?
This year?
Yeah.
I got a lot of good ones. I love the 101.3 sweatshirt, although I already lost it. I need to find it.
You lost the sweatshirt I gave you.
That's good. What I was saying earlier. I'm not organized. I lose everything. I will find it, though.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
It's a priority.
I'm glad.
I got AirPods, which is nice because now I have two sets of Bluetooth headphones.
Okay, so AirPods are the Bluetooth headphones.
Yep.
Okay, they basically look like headphones that come with an iPod or an iPad or an iPhone, but yeah, they don't have the straps to them that, you know, the cord.
Yeah.
I got to say, I don't know if this is me all of a sudden being 30 and not being fun anymore. I don't get the appeal of those.
So there wasn't really one. I would have agreed with you too until they made the charging port and the headphone port the same. And now you have to choose. Like, I like listening to stuff. I need the noise. I also like using my phone a lot, so my phone's always low battery. So I can now charge and listen to things at the same time, which you can't do without a special splitting adapter or having Bluetooth headphones.
Okay, so somebody tell me, 802-655-6672, you have all likely seen people with these AirPods. They're wearing headphones, but there's no cord attached to them. They're essentially wireless small headphones that go in your ear. I don't get the appeal of it. One, how have you not lost this yet? It's so tiny that I feel like I would lose these instantly. Two, it feels rather pompous, to be honest with you. I'll walk through an airport and I'll see every single person is wearing these things. And I'm like, are they actually listening to the thing, or they just not want to be around people? And it's just a way to divert attention and make it look like they're busier than they are. And three, I just don't get the point. What is the problem with the corded headphones?
There wasn't one until you couldn't charge and listen to things at the same time. That's when it became a problem, at least for me, that I, does my jacket have mittens attached to it?
I don't get that. But see, that's why you screen the text before you read it.
Sorry. I got distracted. So I would agree with you. I actually preferred the corded headphones because they're harder to lose, although them catching on things is really annoying too. But now that you have to choose between charging and listening when you have the corded headphones, that's what makes the Bluetooth nice. Is now my phone was charging right now, I could still throw my headphones on and listen to something.
Why do I have to 802-655-6672? I don't get what you're... I want to listen. Why do I have to... Why do I have to choose? If I want to listen to headphones, if I want to listen to music on my phone or a podcast on my phone, I'll plug my headphones into the headphone port and I will charge also in the charging port. You make it sound like I have to do one or the other, and that's not the case when I have corded headphones. So I'm not getting that at all. So that I don't get it. 802-655-6672. We got a phone call about this debate.
Yes, we actually got our good friend Alec Wolf on the line.
Okay, our buddy Alec, who was a former intern here, now is crushing it over at Linden State. Alec, how are you? Happy holidays.
Hey, same to you guys. How are you guys doing?
Good, I appreciate it. We're doing well. Do you have a take on the AirBud or AirPod headphones?
Yeah, so I actually have, I've gone through like two pairs of them.
Because you've lost them.
They have the rechargeable case. Now, the rechargeable cases that you get on them, you can put those in your pocket and keep the AirPods in your case, but there's still the matter of you losing the case. And those don't really like to stay in your ears a lot. And so I've lost them really easily because I just like to set them down on my nightstand, and I tend to move things around a lot, and when that happens, then that's when things get lost. So I don't really prefer the AirPods. I like to go with the, if you guys know what I mean, the headphones that they're Bluetooth still, but they have the wires attached to them.
Yes, that sounds better.
Yeah.
So, Alec, we appreciate it. Happy New Year.
The one thing I will... Oh, is he still there?
No. Yeah. Happy New Year, Alec.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. Thanks.
I forgot to let him say goodbye. I'm making rookie mistakes today. The thing is, the case actually has a function where if you go in your phone, there's a setting to do like find my phone, but for your AirPods, yeah. If you lose them, which that's kind of nice. So you were saying you don't get why you had to choose between charging and listening to music. What was your...
Newer phones... Okay, I guess newer phones don't have a headphone.
That's what
port.
I was saying.
So I have a dinosaur phone is what you're telling me.
It's only the last couple. Lots of people have many generations back. I happened to never have had an iPhone until last year. So when I got one, it was one of the newer ones. You have to choose because there's the one port and it works for both headphones and charging. So if you only have that one port,
That makes more sense then. So I didn't know that newer iPhones don't have a headphone port.
Right.
Or a separate headphone port. Don't you think that people walking around in just AirPods, don't you think that's a bit of an arrogant look though?
I know there are lots of young people who that when they were first really big, that was the whole point of owning them, was to be like, look, I have AirPods.
Yeah.
They're expensive. They're Apple brand, so they're cool.
See, and the headphone thing is crazy because it's gone in phases. It used to be, now Aaron, you're too young for this, but it used to be that there were the headphones that went behind your ear. Like they were thinner, but they went behind your head. So they weren't over the top of your head anymore. So like the stereotypical headphones were like what Steve Bartman wore in the, with the foul ball and the Cubs. They were the dorky ones that went over your head. Then they were the ones that kind of looked like that, but they went around your head so that the part that used to go over the top of your head was now behind your head. Those were cool for a while. Then it went to getting just the giant headphones where the buds part that covered your entire ear and were huge and they looked like earmuffs. Then there were the Beats by Dre craze, and now we're going back to as little headphones as possible with no cord to them. So the headphone craze is always going back and forth, but I think the AirPods are an arrogant look. I think I would lose them. In fact, I know I would lose them. And three, I can't work out in them because tell me that if you try to work out in them, they're going to get very sweaty and they're going to fall out, and that's going to cause me to lose them.
Yes, that's why I like my other Bluetooth headphones. Have you seen the commercials for JLab lately? Like they'll have Giannis dribbling around in them.
Yes.
Those seal into your ears really well. I've played basketball or shot around in those, and they don't come out.
Also, when you have small earbuds, like the ones that would come with iPhones or whatever, and you put them in your... they fall out easily, so when you really wedge them in, they hurt your ear.
Yeah, I found that these have held well so far, but you like especially with the ones with like the soft top, I always change to the biggest one possible.
Yeah, and so you can also answer the phone on these AirPods, right? Like you can talk on the phone and it acts as a microphone also?
Yes, yep, you can do that, which is nice.
And so do you need to be holding your phone to do that, or can my phone be in my pocket while I talk to you?
The funny thing is I don't know, so I've been just playing it safe and holding it close, which I'm not a huge fan of. I prefer to the ear. You have to go in and turn that off every time you get a call, which I'm not a huge fan of.
Okay, so I guess this is me all of a sudden becoming old at 30.
No, there's pros and cons to it. If you have one of the newer phones, I think the pros outweigh the cons, at least for me. But if you have a phone where you can choose to put in corded headphones, I think corded headphones are just fine.
There were also things, there was also a time where I knew people who thought it was just cool to wear headphones, but they weren't actually listening to anything.
That's stupid.
So there were people walking around with just a cord in their pocket attached to nothing just because it would look cool that they had headphones on.
I'm not a fan of that, no.
Sports Saturday, 802-655-6672. Ian O'Connor of ESPN coming up in 10 minutes. Patriots, Dolphins tomorrow. We have it for you at 10 a.m. with the pregame show. Pats can clinch the number 2 seed in the AFC with a win or a Kansas City loss. Patriots have a lot to play for here. There's been a lot of talk this week about what should the Patriots do. Look, Jason McCourty's injured. They've had Jonathan Jones miss last week with a groin. Tom Brady's elbow isn't perfect. Julian Edelman, we know, is banged up every which way. A lot of people say, oh, the Patriots should just sit players because it's the Dolphins. I don't think the Patriots can just afford to sit players. They're not good enough right now to just sit their entire team and just think they're going to waltz all over Miami. Miami's 4-4 in their last 8 games. I think it's 4-3 in their last 7, actually. They've played a lot better of late. The Patriots, I believe, could get by with sitting Jonathan Jones. I think they could get by with sitting Jason McCourty. They can get by with resting players in the secondary because their secondary is so good. But they need to come out here, play Brady, play Edelman, and they need to establish establish dominance, and then maybe they can pull back the reins a little bit, but they're not good enough to come out here and start Jared Stidham and just beat Miami.
Yeah, so over the last eight games, half a season, they have played like a 500 team and not a, what is it now, 4-11 team.
Yeah.
The only real disadvantage they're at that sort of takes away from that is that they're really bad on the road. Their road record is way worse than their home record. But this is a team that has a lot to play for. First of all, division rival. So anytime you can spoil
about Miami.
Yeah. So anytime you can spoil their party, you're going to try, because division rivals hate each other. And then confidence going into the offseason that for the management and for the players, that this is a team moving, trending upwards. There's a lot of reasons for the Dolphins to fight, which is why the Pats will have to fight too, because these are still pro players. This is still a game where anyone can win.
Well, the Dolphins certainly, look, their players are fighting for jobs next year. Okay, the Dolphins have 13 draft picks next year. There's a chance then that 13 players on this team right now that we see tomorrow won't be here a year from now. These guys are fighting for resume tape, they're fighting for game film, they're fighting for opportunity, and they're fighting to keep their jobs going into the offseason. The Dolphins have a lot to play for. They want to win for Brian Flores. They want to see Brian Flores beat Bill Belichick. They want to see, you know, they want to make life tougher for the Patriots, and they want to send a message that going into the offseason that, hey, they're a team that's good enough to compete in the AFC. So I think the Dolphins have a lot to play for. As far as the Patriots and what their game plan should be, they need to come out and they need to run the football. I know it's not sexy. I know it's not fun. I know we'd love to see the Patriots come out and look like the Patriots of old, and Brady goes 15 of 17, and they throw for 200 yards in the first quarter, and then all of a sudden, boom, here we are. It's 21-0, and it's 28-0 at halftime, and we can sit everybody. I don't see that being the case with this Patriots team. That they're not built this way, Aaron. Come out, run the football, establish the run, use all three backs that you have, Burkhead, White, Sony Michel, and pound the Dolphins into submission that way. Absolutely, they can take it. The Dolphins are allowing 136 yards a game on the ground. 136 yards a game on the ground. They are bad against the run. They're awful against the run. Come out, use all three of your running backs, and just show that creativity and versatility we saw last week against Buffalo. I don't think this team is built to just sling it all around the yard.
The really unfortunate thing, which I think we talked about during the week this week, is that the Patriots players who need to sit the most are on offense, and the offense cannot afford to sit people because they're still trying to figure things out for the playoffs right now. They're still a pretty weak group. They had a good bounce back week last week, but they need to play well to win this game and also to make sure they are ready for the postseason.
I'd like to see Mohamed Sanu get involved. Okay, the guy had 10 catches against Baltimore, but since then he's battled the high ankle sprain. 3 catches, 1 catch, 2 catches, a couple drops on 4th downs in various weeks. I'd like to see Sanu get involved. I'd like to see more N'Keal Harry. But you can't get those guys involved, in my opinion, without establishing the run. I know it's not fun. We'd all love to see the Patriots look like the Chiefs look with Patrick Mahomes. We'd like to see them look like the Rams looked last year, where they could throw it all around the yard. That's not this team. If this team comes out tomorrow and asks Tom Brady to throw it 18 times in the first quarter, that's not their best indication. That's not their best game plan for winning. And I don't care if it's boring. If they're going to win the Super Bowl this year, and that's what you ultimately want them to do, they're going to need to run the ball 28 times, 34 times for 165 yards. They're going to need those kind of performances. Get Michel, get Burkhead, get White involved early, and that opens up the pass down the field. Tom Brady last week completed 80% of his passes. Why? Because they also ran the ball for 140 yards plus.
And the exciting thing about last week's game plan was that the run game wasn't boring, because they were getting really creative with it. They were pulling guards. They were running reverses. They were running jet sweeps and jet sweep fakes. And they were doing all this stuff to get their running backs in open space. And it was working really well. I think if they do that, they can beat anybody, because it's really, really hard when you can't stay in front of the game plan running the ball to make sure you're ready for the play action and for the passing game in general.
Well, and you certainly know this, that you can't run effective play action if you have no threat of actually being able to run the football.
Yeah.
And now Tom Brady's at the point of his career where he needs some help. He needs to be lifted up by some of his teammates. He's been lifted up by the defense. Now the offensive players have to do their part as well around him. And we can make it easier on everybody if this team can run the football and stay committed to the plan. We saw 9 different pass catchers in that game against Buffalo, Aaron. That doesn't happen by accident. It happens because the Bills were afraid of the Patriots' ability to run the football. And because they did that, because the Patriots were able to dictate tempo and dictate play, they were able to come out then and do other things they haven't been able to do this year. I think they can take advantage of the same things against Miami. I just don't want to see the Patriots get pass happy to the point where they're just in such a rush to finish the Dolphins off that they're playing uncharacteristically.
And I really don't want them playing beyond the sticks. I think that was really hurting them, especially with Brady trying to get to the point where he trusts his receivers. Having them run 15-yard routes where they have to beat tough coverage down the field is not what you want. The shorter routes off of the motions and stuff that keep the defense scared of the run are really going to give Brady the opportunity to trust those young receivers and give them opportunities. And by doing so, maybe get 8 or 9 guys to get the ball.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Ian O'Connor of ESPN, he will join us. He wrote an unbelievable story for ESPN.com about Eli Manning and his last days with the New York Giants. Ian O'Connor, what were his biggest takeaways from that piece on Eli? He's next. Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game.
Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com. Jeff and Austin out, Brady and Aaron in. I want to go right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find one of the best writers at ESPN. It's Ian O'Connor. He wrote a great story on Eli Manning for ESPN.com this week. Ian, thank you for being with us. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you.
Good. I appreciate you joining us. You've joined us before to talk about your work on your book about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. But the story on Eli was awesome, likely in his final days as a member of the New York Giants. I think everybody agrees on that. What was the biggest thing you took away from your own piece?
I just think the way Eli has carried himself for 16 years in the New York market. And if you look at it from a distance back in 2004 when he was acquired on draft day, you would think, well, this could be a marriage that isn't necessarily a great one. Eli was a very quiet kid from the South, entering the loudest marketplace in the world, and you would have thought that at least I thought San Diego would have a better match for him. Of course, the Chargers picked him at number one,
yeah.
And Eli and his camp told the Chargers, "We do not want to play for you," and wanted that trade to the Giants and got it. So. I've covered Derek Jeter. I did for his entire career as a columnist in New York. And very much like Jeter, Eli was able to navigate the big city in such a way where he was never in any sort of controversy. He, despite being a big star in the biggest market, you never saw until the last week or so a video or picture of him in a compromising situation or doing something in a bar, and until he was caught with Daniel Jones, yes, having a good time after they beat Washington. It's hilarious that right at the end of his career, it was the first time anyone had ever really seen Eli in that kind of a setting, acting the way he did. Not that he was doing anything wrong, but so I think it was the way that he carried himself and navigated New York for 16 years, and of course the two championships, and I think he did just enough to get into the Hall of Fame. We'll find out soon enough.
In addition to just navigating New York, how much pressure was on Eli just to live up to his own last name?
That's a great question. I think there was a ton of pressure, although you would never know it just by talking to him, being around him for those 16 years, particularly early on. Now, he struggled early in New York, and there was a feeling like maybe this was all too much for him, but I don't get the sense that that was really about Peyton and being his kid brother. Like, he was not afraid to go to Mississippi, to Ole Miss, despite the fact that his father was a legend there. I remember talking to his high school coach, and he said Eli didn't care about stuff like that. So I think it was just physically and mentally getting adjusted to the NFL and New York, and not so much being concerned about the pressure or the shadow of his big brother. I really don't think that was had a major impact on him. Once he got going, of course, and listen, there are a lot of people who believe he did not have a Hall of Fame career. And I think if you're in that camp, you have a valid argument. You can find holes in his career that are big enough where you say, you know what, this isn't good enough for Ken. I take the opposite approach and think that the two Super Bowl runs, being MVP in both of those games. Now, Big Ben, they could have stayed where they were at number four in that 2004 draft and taken Roethlisberger without trading any draft picks to get Eli. And you could say, hey, we probably would have ended up with those two titles without making that deal. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure how Roethlisberger would have handled himself in New York, given his off-field issues in Pittsburgh. And Roethlisberger was not the MVP in either of his Super Bowl victories. So I think it worked out in a big way, and I just don't...
His lack of expression for his overall, just kind of for his lack of emotion, his lack of expression for his overall, just kind of, you know, Opie attitude, you know, Opie from the Andy Griffith Show, which you wrote in the piece. But look, Sam Darnold doesn't have a huge personality. Daniel Jones doesn't have a huge personality. Do you think Eli has kind of laid the blueprint for these kind of players to be successful in New York?
I do, but I think he borrowed it from Jeter. Jeter didn't have a big personality. Mariano Rivera didn't have a big personality. They both were huge parts of five championship teams in New York, and maybe that's the trick. You try not to read a lot that's written about you, and you can do your commercial endorsements, but pick your spots. Remember, I don't know if you recall this story, but Eli hosted Saturday Night Live after he won his second Super Bowl title. He was asked to do it after his first, and he didn't think he had accomplished enough to do it after his brother, I believe, had done it the year before. So I think you can enjoy yourself in New York as a big star, but also sort of keep an even keel approach to just the way you carry yourself on and off the field. I think that would serve you in a big way. It did for Jeter, it did for Mariano Rivera, and it certainly did for Eli.
Ian O'Connor of ESPN with us here on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com, wrote the story on Eli Manning and his career arc in New York with the Giants as we come up to his likely final game in New York tomorrow when the Giants take on the Eagles. What do you think the ultimate future is for Eli? Do you think he's said publicly he does not want to be a backup in the future? He wants to be a starter. Do you think there's a job for him next year?
He doesn't want to be a coach. He doesn't want to be a backup. I'm not sure he wants to be a broadcaster, although I think he does have a sneaky, funny personality behind closed locker room doors. Yeah. He's a master prankster. His sense of humor, his teammates love. So he just doesn't often show that side for public view. I think that he's going to retire, but you have to leave open the possibility that one perfect situation will present itself. Now, how many of those situations, guys, are likely to be out there? Not many. I think the one that they believe the Manning camp sees possible interest from the Indianapolis Colts. Now, the Manning family obviously has a lot of history with that market and that franchise. It didn't end well, but still a lot of good memories still tethered to that franchise. Do they really believe in Brissett long term? And they probably believe they have the offensive line to protect an immobile quarterback who has maybe a year or two left to try to win big with that team. So the Colts would be a possibility in my mind and in the minds of some people close to Eli, but I don't know how many other situations you can even look at and say, wow, this would be a great fit. I think that Eli's window is so small now and his mobility is down to next to nothing that it has to be a perfect situation for him, and I just don't think there are going to be many out there. So I think the most likely scenario is he retires as a one uniform lifer with the New York Giants.
What do Eli's teammates think about him? One of my favorite parts of your article was the teammates that came to his defense, but also there were teammates that have questioned him throughout the years and he never took the bait. Ultimately, what is his legacy with his teammates?
The one time he took the bait, he really had to. Tiki Barber criticized him publicly early in that 2007, that first championship season after Barber had retired. Eli, there were people around him that said, you have to fire back on this one because that was so public and just to establish your own leadership. And he did, but really he has shied away from ever doing that. Some teammates have questioned him publicly here and there. But by and large, I think he's one of the most respected figures in the NFL. I think his teammates love him. I think they respect him. And you look, there were those videos from Hoboken, New Jersey, after beating Washington and him being out with Daniel Jones. In one of those videos, you see Jones wrap his left arm around Eli's shoulder and pull him in a very affectionate way. And just to see Eli, the kind of support he's given Jones, the kid drafted to replace him over the course of the season, I think he has shown you why he is so respected. That last victory over Miami, and thankfully, he got that opportunity to have that moment to see him on the sideline after being pulled from the field by Pat Shurmur on the video board at MetLife Stadium. You could tell he didn't even want to be on that video board as thousands of people are standing and cheering for him and chanting his name. So it's that kind of presence. The poise he's had over 16 years has really made him a revered player in New York, even though you can look at his career again and see a lot of pretty big holes.
What do you think ultimately happens tomorrow in the game against the Eagles? Does Eli play any part of it? Does he go out? If the Giants are winning, does he go out and take the victory formation snap? If they're losing and Philly's in the victory formation, does he go out there at linebacker just to get a send-off? Or do we just end it with the great moment he had a couple of weeks ago?
I think that's probably the most likely scenario, is that they had a great moment. He got his send-off. That day was tailor-made for Eli. So let's not try to add to that moment, okay? Tomorrow really should be about trying to deny the Eagles a chance to win the NFC East and giving Daniel Jones an opportunity. Hey, go out and beat Carson Wentz. Saquon Barkley, you finally got it rolling this year after a very disappointing and difficult season. Let's see you go out and prove you're the best athlete on the field and gain 160 yards rushing. I think the Giants, Pat Shurmur, I think will be fired anyway. Dave Gettleman has a better chance of staying. But Shurmur has a right to try to win this game to make his case. So I think tomorrow should be all about the Giants trying to win that football game, not just to deny the Eagles the division title, but for themselves. And it is a division rival. Now, if they have the game in hand and on that final snap they want to send Eli out on the field to take the knee, I don't have a problem with that. But I think going beyond that would be not necessary, and it really isn't necessary after the kind of moment Eli had against Miami.
Ian, we'll get you out of here on this. Who's under more pressure in New York? Is it the Giants and their lack of success lately, the Knicks and their lack of success for a decade, or is it the Yankees because the expectations are now so high with the Gerrit Cole signing?
In a funny way, it's the Yankees, yeah. Right? They've won one championship in what, 19, 20 years, so to lay out that kind of money for Gerrit Cole, it's kind of funny to say they're under more pressure than the Knicks and the Giants, given the states of those franchises right now, but it is true, right? Their mission statement every year is to win it, and even though they're constantly knocking on the door, they've had some great teams since 2000. They've won one championship in 2009, so why don't we go with that?
Ian O'Connor, ESPN, one of the best. Ian, we appreciate it. Thank you for your perspective. Thank you for your time. Have a great new year.
All right, you too, guys. Thank you.
All right, there he goes. Ian O'Connor, senior writer over at ESPN at ESPN.com. I love that piece, Aaron. I love that piece. I know you read it. If you haven't read it, I encourage you to go find it on ESPN.com. Just about the legacy of Eli Manning. Forget the on-field stuff, because that, look, you can debate the 117-117 record, the interceptions, the completion percentage, all of that. You can debate all that for another time. But just how Eli Manning went through 15 years in New York, in that bubble, in that microscope, and never found himself in any compromising position, never found himself in any trouble, and was the quintessential player for a franchise for a long time. I think that's something that deserves to be recognized and deserves to be valued.
I really respect his kindness and his poise as a man. I think, like he said, the supporting Daniel Jones is not easy to do. Most quarterbacks aren't going to do that.
Joe Flacco said in Denver, he goes, I'm not a mentor. That's what he said. He goes, I am not here to mentor this kid. We're talking about Drew Locke.
Yeah, because it definitely hurts your pride, I think, for most people. But Eli never let that get in the way. I think the only time he even showed any pride at all was when he was going to be benched and lose his streak. And that's understandable, because that's a record you're going for. That is a testament to how tough you are as a player. I love the prank stories.
Yeah.
Changing a SNL comedian's phone to Mandarin when you're taking a picture of him and your brother and then not changing it back later. So good.
The number one word I think when I think of Eli is just simply professional. Yeah. Just professional. He just handled things right. Good, bad, the other. One other anecdote that I love from that story, and I forgot to bring it up to Ian, was when it comes to talking to the media after games, when the Giants would lose, Eli would always speak on Monday so he could take the criticism. When the Giants would win, he would wait until Tuesday so that his teammates could get the glory on Monday. And I thought that was something that was really, really interesting, because I didn't even think about, okay, when is he talking? When is he not talking? Well, he always did it based on whether they won or lost and whether or not he needed to be the one there to take the criticism.
Yeah, I think he was, people talk about like a leader as someone who should be loud and in charge and get everyone bolstered up, but he was always a leader by example, which I think is really commendable.
Well, certainly is. I like Daniel Jones. I think it's interesting when Ian says that possibly the Colts could be a possible landing spot for Eli. I don't know that I want to go to the Colts if I were Eli and try to live up to my brother's legacy in Indianapolis. Now, if Now, that would be a good situation as far as a team that's closer to winning, a team that plays indoors. You don't have to deal with the bad weather. You're always going to play in at least home favorable conditions. That makes a lot of sense, but I don't think that I want to be living up to my brother's legacy, especially as I'm at the back end of my career. We ready to take a break here?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's take a break. We come back. Hot or not, the game sweeping the airwaves. That's next. Sports Saturday, 101.3, the game.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3, the game.
Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game, 101.3thegame.com. Post-Christmas edition, Hanukkah edition of Sports Saturday, leading you in to New Year's, wishing everybody a safe and happy New Year, a healthy New Year as well. Jeff and Austin are out. They'll be back next week. Aaron and Brady are here. Aaron Sports Saturday, always every week, does your favorite game, Hot or Not, thanks to Superb Cupcakes in Williston.
Yes, sir. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston for the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint, offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes that are always made from scratch daily. There is no box mix at Superb, so go ahead and make your day superb.
And you had Superb Cupcakes last week in this show, didn't you?
Yeah, their holiday flavors are phenomenal. I had eggnog last week. They had nutmeg on top, and it was like eggnog frosting, and it was so good.
I'm not an eggnog guy. I had eggnog once to drink, and I think it was without alcohol. I just didn't like it.
Yeah, it's definitely really rich and like thick and syrupy almost. I like it in my coffee, and I like things that are eggnog flavored.
Yeah,
I don't really drink it straight.
Way too young to be as addicted to coffee as you are.
I started drinking coffee when I was 9.
You are 20 years old. Why do you need so much coffee?
I'm a low energy person with high energy expectations of myself.
You're going to find coffee is an expensive thing.
Yeah.
I mean, these people that go to Starbucks or go to Dunkin' every single day and get coffee. I mean, you're spending $5-6 a pop every day.
You know what I was doing in college to keep the coffee prices down? Because me and my dad both drink a lot of coffee, so they've been paying
brewing
for it.
Yourself?
Yeah, I would get like big bulk bags of ground, and I had a French press. In the morning, I would French press a batch of coffee.
Okay, well, my brother also brews his own coffee, and so he keeps his costs down too, but I've never been into coffee, ever. I've never had a cup.
A lot of people haven't. And some people, like my mom has a funny story. I won't share it because it's private, but she won't drink coffee anymore. But I know a lot of people who won't drink coffee, but yeah. I need it. I can't get through the day without it. I couldn't drink my coffee because of a medication thing for my stomach last week before the show. When I was trying to write my sports update, I could not write it until I was able to drink my coffee.
Now you're getting your wisdom teeth out soon.
Yep. Very soon, actually.
You probably won't want to drink coffee with that either. I'll tell you, I only had 2 of my wisdom teeth taken out. That was the most pain I've ever been in.
Yeah, I won't be doing much of anything after the teeth get pulled. So.
But I was back a day later. Like, it didn't last very long, but now you're going to get knocked out for this, right?
Yeah, they're putting me under.
Okay, I didn't get to get put under because I was only having 2. So right. They just gave me so much Novocaine, I actually got to watch and listen to this, and I got to hear what was happening. Oh.
I can't do it. I'm very glad they're putting me under because the IV alone is too much for me.
Okay. So when the Novocaine wore off, you've never been in so much pain. But then the drugs they gave me kicked in, so it didn't last that long. Oh my God, I was sore. I had to bite down on a piece of gauze for like 4 hours, as I recall too.
Yeah, no, I've heard it's brutal. My plan is to consume unbelievable amounts of ibuprofen and not move.
Ibuprofen, they're going to give you stronger than ibuprofen.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to take it. Some people don't take it. I know that's the more painful route, but our family has a history of opioid problems, so I'm avoiding that.
Well then.
Supposedly, if you take them responsibly, it's not a problem. I'm not risking it.
Okay, well, then you're going to need some ibuprofen
for sure.
Yeah,
a lot of ibuprofen.
So, all right, hot or not time, what do you got for us? Now, this is, if I think it's true, I say hot?
Yes, so Okay. Basically, it's a play on the term hot take. It's not actually whether it's like a hot take or not. It's whether that hot take is something you agree with or not, and we're just playing on the word on the term hot take by using the term hot as the positive and not as the not positive.
So hot means true, not means false.
Yeah.
Okay. What do we got?
The Saints should sign Antonio Brown.
Not?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, not. Okay. It's not worth it to me. And I'm sorry. I understand. How good you are dictates how big a distraction you can be. Antonio Brown is a distraction. Somebody will pick him up, whether it's for this year or whether it's next year. But what is there to gain by this? He likely is headed right to the commissioner's exempt list. So now you've taken the PR hit and you've distracted your team going into the playoffs for a guy who likely can't play. Even as good as Antonio Brown is, you're going to give him 1 to 2 weeks to get integrated into the offense. He could probably do it, but it's not going to be completely seamless. And three, I do not place winning above all else. And I'm sorry that I don't, because a lot of fans do. I do not want to sign that caliber of player or that kind of guy to come in here and help us win. It's just not worth it to me.
And even if you do place winning above everything else, he's not helping anyone do any winning this postseason, because he's, like you said, I don't think it's even a maybe. I think he'll go right to the exempt list the moment he gets signed. Well,
that's what Ian Rappaport said yesterday of NFL Network. What's number two?
All right, Steph Curry is the NBA player of the decade. This coming from New York Times.
Ooh.
I gotta say no. I think it's still LeBron's decade, even with him getting older and stuff. The way he impacted the game when he went to Miami, and the way he impacted the game by upsetting the Warriors in the finals, I think he's still the second greatest player of all time in my mind. First greatest in a lot of people's minds. I don't think Steph takes it, even with the way he changed the mentality around shooting.
I would say not also. I'll also agree with LeBron for everything from going to Miami to going back to Cleveland to winning to the Olympics, all that. I will go with LeBron also, but Steph's impact on the decade is undeniable because kids see Steph Curry and they see someone who's relatable, okay? People see LeBron, you look at it, he's not relatable. He's nobody that you can fathom yourself being, okay? No, I don't look at LeBron and say, I can get that big. I can get that strong. I can jump that high. LeBron is somebody who you can't picture yourself being. Steph, though, on the other hand, I can be short. I can be scrawny. I can be not incredibly fast. I cannot jump that high. But I can shoot, and I will practice shooting and dribbling. So Steph's impact on kids, I think, has been far greater this decade than LeBron. But in terms of the most impactful NBA player, that's still LeBron.
Not to mention his impact on coaches' mentalities around shooting threes in volume with how efficient he is doing so. But then you got to look at guys like Kevin Durant who are doing similar things at almost 7 feet. And that, I think, changes the game just as much. The fact that now guys like Porzingis and Antetokounmpo's attempting threes now.
Well, that, though, has been a thing now. The big guy shooting threes, that's been a thing, okay? Dirk Nowitzki brought that to the game prior to 2010, prior to this decade starting. So it's newer now to see the big guy be as athletic as they are, but to see the big guys out on the perimeter, that's not a new thing.
Right. All right. Eli Manning is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I hate this question. First ballot? No, the answer is not. Yeah. Is he a Hall of Famer? Probably, but again, this is such a lazy sports radio debate. if you have nothing to talk about, you talk about the following. Is Brady the greatest player of all time? Is LeBron better than Jordan? Should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame? And is Eli a Hall of Famer? If you have nothing left to talk about, that's what you talk about. First ballot, the answer is no. Is he a Hall of Famer? Ian O'Connor says yes, and that's fine. I hope Eli gets in. He probably will get in, given that he played for the Giants. He won 2 Super Bowls. His last name is Manning. His brother's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I think all of that is going to matter ultimately. First ballot, though, the answer is not.
For me, it's hard because I don't want to give him all this credit because he got the 2 rings. I hate people who put everything into rings for singular players, because the reality is no one wins a ring by themselves. It's not how sports works, especially football. But he had some really good seasons, too. So I think eventually he's a Hall of Famer, not first ballot, though.
Yeah. Wade in St. Albans says, I'm really wrong. Eli is first ballot. 2 Super Bowls. What about his Ironman run of 220 consecutive starts? Phenomenal. That's great. And I love Eli. However, he's at 117 and 117. He's not going to be a guy that is going to get in on the first ballot. He's just not.
Yeah. And I don't care if he got MVP for the 2 Super Bowls. You can't give him all credit for all of those.
And I don't know that it's going to happen, but let's just say Tom Brady and Eli both retire this year. Well, Brady is getting in on the first ballot.
Yeah.
I don't think both of them are getting in on the first ballot.
Right. All right. The Patriots will not make it past the divisional round. This comes from Nick Wright.
Ooh, Nick Wright, Fox Sports 1, notorious Patriots hater. I would say not. Well, yeah, I would say not. I think that they have if they get the first round bye, and have 2 weeks to prepare for Kansas City, I could see them winning that game. I don't think they'll go and beat Baltimore. I don't think the Patriots will win the Super Bowl. Whether that means they lose round in the divisional round, championship round, or the Super Bowl, that I'm not sure yet. I don't think they win the Super Bowl because I don't think they could beat Kansas City, Baltimore, and one of the NFC Titans 3 weeks in a row, or three games in a row. But if they have 2 weeks to prepare, they get the first round bye by beating Miami, they have 2 weeks to prepare, I think they could beat Kansas City at home.
I think their path to the Super Bowl is they manage to get by Kansas City somehow, and then someone upsets Baltimore somehow. Because they're not beating Baltimore. I don't think they're built to beat Baltimore at all.
Well, I don't think Buffalo's beating Baltimore.
No, it would have to be a miracle. I think if they meet the Ravens in the playoffs, they'll lose.
So right now, we don't know who the sixth seed would be. Tennessee has the inside track at the sixth seed in the AFC. So if they were to win, they would play Baltimore. If they lose, then Buffalo would play Baltimore, or Houston could play Baltimore.
Hey, if you want an upset, Tennessee wins the weirdest games of anybody.
Tennessee does win weird games. I won't bet Tennessee. Even for our picks here, I won't bet Tennessee.
Yeah.
All right, question five, what do we got?
The Celtics should go after Kevin Love.
Not? Why?
Well, their bench is really thin right now. As a matter of fact, they only have two bench players who average over 5 points. 60 of their 111 points per game come from three players. That would be Kemba, Jalen, and Jason. But I agree with you, no, because you're going to have to give up a pretty good amount to get Kevin Love. He is the only thing good about the Cavs right now, and he's playing pretty well. I think that if you were going to try and get someone on the cheap to help bolster your bench, there are better options than Kevin Love anyway.
Well, the amount Kevin Love's due like $30 million for the next several years. He's over 30 years old. You'd have to trade Gordon Hayward. You'd have to trade multiple bench pieces and draft picks to go get Kevin Love. That's not worth it. As for the idea that the Celtics need a big man, well, do they really need a big man?
No.
Because they're tied for fifth in the NBA at 6.1 blocks per game, despite not having said big man. They're 14th in defensive rebound rate, 6th in offensive rebound rate, and they're 3rd-ranked defense overall. They're making it work with what they've got, and if Hayward and if Marcus Smart are healthy for a prolonged period of time, I think those are the additions enough that they need.
I think if they were going to get somebody to help protect them from, because they've already lost Gordon Hayward once this year, and then again for a much shorter period of time, and they lost Marcus Smart too. That was one of the worst eye infections
they've ever seen.
So that's not necessarily something that's going to come back up. But if they want to bolster their bench, it's going to have to be someone who's a scoring wing or a scoring guard, because they have no size at guard right now. And you don't want Brad Wanamaker trying to be one of your leading scorers off the bench. You just don't.
Yes, Jamal Crawford. Bring him in. That's who I want.
Absolutely.
I love Jamal Crawford. The league loves Jamal Crawford. I know he's 39 years old, but dude can still score off the bench. He is better than Brad Wanamaker. I want Jamal Crawford in here. That's who I want in Boston.
Yeah, that guy's going to bring you buckets to make up for the fact that you're undersized off the bench, and so you're going to give up some points. That's hot or not.
Wade is still ripping me. I'm still heated about your Eli comments. He beat the 18-0 pass with Amani Toomer and David Tyree, who went to prison the next year.
That defense was really good, though.
David Tyree went to prison? I'll have to verify that.
And Tyree made that play.
That was an incredible play. Tyree.
Escaping the sack is definitely a great play by Eli, but that wasn't a great throw, and it was against a safety who really isn't someone you want to throw at, but Tyree just muscled the ball down. So you can't throw Tyree's name out like he was a liability when he made the play of the game. That defense, though, was really the big thing. That offense was supposed to be unstoppable by the Patriots, and they got stopped because that defense, both Super Bowls, was very, very good.
David Tyree did go to prison. Interesting.
That's crazy.
Wade and St. Albans bringing the knowledge there. We'll come back. We'll close out the show. Sports Saturday, 101.3, the game.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Sports Saturday, 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com. Taking you out of the holidays, well, the gift-giving holidays, and into the New Year's holiday. Wishing everybody a safe and happy New Year. Let us be the first to wish you that. Jeff and Austin will be back next week. Aaron here, Brady here as well. Good show today, Aaron. Lots of great stuff, actually. If you missed any of our conversation with Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press in Miami, got us ready for Patriots Dolphins. Also provided some really interesting context on the Don Shula, Bill Belichick debate and on how Brian Flores has built up that Dolphins team somewhat in the Patriots image. And also Ian O'Connor of ESPN, who told us he thinks Eli Manning is going to retire, but did mention the Indianapolis Colts as a possibility for him. All of those interviews will be available online after the show, as well as the full show podcast online at 1013thegame.com. Yes, that's what Aaron's like, what am I supposed to say here? So, hey, we do have a lot of stuff coming up this weekend in our family of networks. How about college basketball today? 101.3 The Game. 3:30 coverage starts Louisville and Kentucky, in-state rivalry there in a battle of top programs. Over on 960 The Zone tonight, Raptors at Celtics. That's 6:30. Over on WVMT tonight, 6:30, UVM men's hockey as they take on Union College in the tournament here at the Gutterson Fieldhouse. So 6:30. Tomorrow, Patriots coverage starts at 10 a.m. Pats take on the Dolphins. I've got the Patriots winning that game. Final score 26-13 is my prediction.
I think 35-17. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick has a decent game, but I don't think that defense can stop the Pats at all.
So, I mean, 16 points is a huge spread, so you've got the Patriots covering that. So interesting. That's a hard spread.
Their secondary sucks. Dolphins secondary sucks.
Well, their defense is bad in general.
Yes.
The only chance the Dolphins really have is just letting Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, if Ryan Fitzpatrick goes off to Devontae Parker in a way that he can, but is unlikely, that feels like the only chance that they have.
Yeah, get that good Fitz magic.
So, 10 a.m. tomorrow with the pregame show, 1 p.m. for the kickoff, week 17. I can't believe that we have come this far in another NFL season. Sunday Night Football will have for you as well. San Francisco at my Seahawks. Return of Marshawn Lynch. I have no idea how that's going to go. Coverage will start at 7:30. We've got Bruins hockey on Sunday as well when they take on Buffalo at 6:30. That's who they beat yesterday. And then UVM women's basketball tomorrow takes on Merrimack. And then men's hockey takes on Lake Superior State. So a busy, busy weekend of sports here on our family of networks. Again, Jeff Paul, Austin Danforth will be back next week with Sports Saturday. So the show will be back in its proper form. They will be here post New Year's, breaking down week 17 and the upcoming playoff matchups in the NFL. And UVM basketball will have been in action again, too. They play on New Year's Eve against George Washington. So for Aaron Wells, Aaron, great job today. We will see you next week. I'm Brady Farkas. We'll be back with the huddle on Monday, breaking down week 17 as well. Patriots Dolphins talk that comes at 3:00 Monday. See ya.
We are where sports live. WCPV, Essex, Burlington, Plattsburgh. 101.3 The Game.